congratulations on the new deal. Why has this been such a good fit for you?
Yeah, it really has. It's you don't know how things are going to turn out in life. And for me, I've had a lot of good luck, good timing, right place, right time. People believe in me and give me an opportunity. You know, I've said this many times. I think jobs, careers, they're about who you work with and for. I mean, you could take what you guys do for a living in the morning if you don't like who you work with and for, as much as I'm sure it's great to have those kind of jobs and their status and prestige, you're not going to enjoy yourself. So, you know, from my standpoint, my boss here, Terry McGurk, he's the chairman of the club and he's the control person of the club. I report directly to him. He's been great, fully supportive, whether I needed staffing, needed to pump money into data, you know, whatever, needed more money at trade deadline, things like that. And he's just very supportive and he's a great boss to have. And then beyond that, obviously, Atlanta's been a good fit for our family. Kids have been settled in. My wife really enjoys it as well. Close to Toronto, so family gets back in the summers and go to camps and all that kind of stuff. So they get a little bit of a blend. They're growing up in the United States, but they still get to connect with their Canadian roots. And I'm glad that I get the chance to stay here, and hopefully for a long time.
With Alex Anthopoulos, the newly minted president of baseball ops for the Atlanta Braves. Of course, he's been the general manager there for a couple of years. You're listening to Leadoff. So you take John Gibbons off the unemployment line. What's his what's his exact role going to be?
Yeah, so he you know, when he managed, obviously everyone views him through that lens, but he's always a really good evaluator of talent, still is. And that's something that you fans wouldn't see, that media necessarily wouldn't see it. You're in meetings a lot, GM, manager role, things like that. Dana Brown, who worked with him in Toronto, got to know him well. He's the one who approached me about it, and initially I was reluctant just because I didn't even want the assumption with me being in my position I am here, our current manager, who I'm thrilled with, we just extended it, and his staff. I didn't even want to take a chance that any insinuations or thoughts that this was a, you know, it was another job in waiting and things like that. So initially when Dana Brown brought it to me to hire him, because he runs the amateur department, and said, look, he's a great evaluator. We know that. We've been around him for a long time. Remember all the guys he got right, guys he told us to trade. He just has a really good eye for talent. And I said, look, in a vacuum, I like the idea. I just don't know that Atlanta's the right place, considering ties and things like that. And said, let me just kind of chew on it. But I do believe you let people run their departments. And Dana runs the amateur department, and you give people, individuals, autonomy to run their departments. You can hold them accountable at that point because they do have the freedom. And I know that from Terry McGurk's standpoint, chairman of the club, he gives me autonomy to run baseball operations. And the day he's not pleased or happy with it, I'm going to have no complaints because he's allowed me to do everything that I believed in. So I ultimately called our manager at the time and said, look, this is something Dana wants to do. I just want to make sure you don't have any concerns. And he said, no. I mean, one, everyone loves John, you know, John Gibbons is a guy we all know is a great guy. And he doesn't report to me. He doesn't work for me. He works for the organization. He works for Dana. And we're glad to have him.
Is it easier to, I find, pick up guys or hire people that you've worked with in the past or that you know and trust? Or how does that work when you're adding people to your organization, whether it's a guy you've had or someone, you know, that you have a former coach or scout that you've had in the past?
You know, I would say the bar is higher if there's a pre-existing relationship. I would take it a step further, say that if I have a pre-existing relationship with someone and I know someone, unless they're reporting directly to me, I'm probably not going to hire them. I've been around, I mean, I've been with a few clubs now, and I've seen it, you know, when I wasn't a GM, GMs bring in people that they're close to, relationships, they get put into departments. The people that run those departments didn't make the hires. And I remember as a young guy, whether it was an intern or scouting coordinator or whatever it was, I didn't agree with it. You know, and obviously I was going to respect what those above me were going to decide, but I just remember thinking it's not fair to the person running the department that they're being told who to hire. It's the same thing. If I walked into the Atlanta Braves and Terry McGurk told me I had to have so-and-so on my staff and so-and-so, and it's just not going to work that way. I believe you hire someone to do the job, you let them do the job, give them the autonomy to do it. If you're not satisfied, you're not pleased, you have the ability to make that change. So if they're reporting to me, of course, relationships are important. You know exactly what you're going to get. You don't have to guess. I think you have to be very careful in this game. Sitting someone down, trying to do an interview, a lot of people just don't, they don't interview well, and conversely, some do really well. And I think the background work you do on every employee is the most important thing. I think the interview is just kind of the final stamp, but I'd probably put 20% of the weight on it and 80% on all the work we do and the people that they've worked with in the past.
That's super interesting. If I'm kind of understanding you correctly, you're less concerned about kind of the nepotism angle and more concerned about just the ownership and making sure people are comfortable and given the power to hire who they want to do. Do you think that the game would be better and maybe the opinions expressed in front offices and meetings would be much more diverse and different if there were less people kind of hiring what they know and the people that they know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a loaded question, and there's definitely a lot to it. I mean, I can tell you, you know, from my standpoint, look, I've had a lot of people that I know, I've had relationships with that have called me, asked me for jobs, and I tell them the same thing. Look, I like you, and we've worked together in the past. I think you do great work, but if the person running the department, they're the ones that are going to make the hire. So if you want to sit down with them, interview with them, talk to them, and I'll tell the person, right away, I said, do not hire this person because you think there's some connection to me. You know, we need results. We need results. And at the end of the day, whoever you hire, you feel like they're going to help you do your job well. That's what it should come down to. You know, in terms of people feeling comfortable and so on, a big one for me, I don't have a lot of meetings, but when we do, we try to make them worthwhile and short. I like a lot of open dialogue. There's no bad ideas. There's no bad comments. If someone even tries to go down the path of trying to make fun of a question or a comment or an idea, I don't really tolerate things like that. I want an open forum and people to bounce ideas off and feel free no matter where it's coming from, the intern, the CEO, whoever it is. We should be able to speak freely because we all want the same things. We want to get the call right.
With Alex Anthopoulos, now the president of baseball operations for the Atlanta Braves, this is Leadoff. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. There's a bit of a deeper dive we'll get into here on this Houston Astros sign-stealing situation, Alex. But from the bird's eye view, 10,000 feet up in the sky, as you've observed this, what have you felt? What have you taken away from it? Because, man, there has been a lot of heated anger from a bunch of different corners of this sport, players on other teams included, over the last week and a half.
No, you're right. And I listen to MLB satellite radio on my drive to spring training each day. And, you know, it's just the story that won't go away. I understand it needs to be talked about. I understand it's not going to be swept under the rug. I do think, and I'm speaking strictly for myself, at some point we need to move on. The reason baseball thrives and survives because we love the game. We enjoy it. And you know, this isn't the side of it that we enjoy or the topics that we enjoy. So as far as I'm concerned, I know there's opinions all over the place. A few things for me. I thought Chris Sale's comments, I don't know if you guys got a chance to see them. I probably mirror how he feels in terms of if I have an opinion, I'm not grabbing a camera and talking into the camera, getting the opinion. If I feel strongly about something, I'm probably going to get on the phone and call whoever I need to call, voice my displeasure, and do it that way. That's my style. Mm-hmm. It sounds like that's Chris Sale's style too, and that's fine. Other people have chosen to go some other ways. But, you know, beyond that, all I cared about at the end of the day on this thing, everyone knew, you know, obviously the story broke, it came out. The bottom line for me was what happened. Everyone should know what happened. How was it addressed? And let's move on. And I know there's been talk about the punishments and so on. I agree with the commissioner that the public shaming that has gone on is more impactful for me than anything else. You can do suspensions, fines, our reputations, who we are as individuals, how we're viewed by our peers is everything, in my opinion. So they're going to live with that for the rest of their lives, more so than someone's going to remember if you got suspended for 6 months or a year, or you have to write a check for a fine. That's something that I think is as great a deterrent as anything. And I have all the confidence in the world that this is never going to happen again. And it was addressed. It was addressed. Everyone got to the bottom of it. We got the facts. People lost jobs. Careers have been impacted. both on the playing side and obviously his front office and so on. And I'm hopeful that we start to talk about the players and the games and things like that. And I understand this has to run its course in terms of, you know, the news cycle and so on. But, you know, we have our staff meeting and player meeting today, first full squad workout. And I hope that from an Atlanta Braves standpoint, we have the 2020 year to play. And that's what the focus should be right now. That other stuff for us is in the past.
Well, and I'll point out two things, Alex, off of what you said. Jim Crane doesn't seem to care, because I thought that press conference was pretty lame last Thursday. And the one thing out of the entire 27-minute experience that stuck with me was when he said, we won the World Series and we'll leave it at that. So some people do not suffer shame. And on the Chris Sale thing, we did play earlier today on the program a J.D. Martinez quote. I'm just hesitant anything coming from a Boston Red Sox right now, because they're about to wear something too, right? So everybody's got an angle in this. I'm not saying you're wrong, but everybody's got an angle in this.
No, and I get it. And trust me, I respect, and everyone has the right to their opinion to be angry, upset, get it out. You know, and it's not about being right and wrong, right? It's just everyone internalizes, handles things their own way. Trust me, I've seen all the press conferences. I've seen all of it. And certainly I have opinions on it. You know, there's some things where you might cringe, no doubt. I just wonder at what point do we talk about the game again? And look, that might be in another week or 2 weeks. And I understand it'll be a story all season at various times. But I do think we'll all be better for it when we finally do get to focus on the game. And look, there's everybody in the media is down in spring training. You've got 30 camps open. You've got daily access. It's going to be a topic for a long time, and I understand that. But I understand a lot of what's been said, the criticisms and all those things. I'm not going to defend any of it, nor do I even want to go down that path. Just from my own thoughts on this thing is I do think if with what's gone on, I think people are going to think long and hard about even going down this path again to do something like this.
So I agree with you on that front, and I think this will run its course. It's difficult, though, because, you know, even if people aren't necessarily baseball fans, the general sports consciousness all understand cheating and playing with an unfair advantage and what that would mean to you as a competitor, no matter what level that you've played at, if someone were to do that to you. But you say, you know, we want to talk about the game, get back to the game. There had been problems with the game before this. People are talking about the length of the game, viewership, attendance, registration at a grassroots level. What impact, if any, do you think something like this with the Astros and the Red Sox has on the bigger picture in baseball?
I mean, look, any type of negative events are not good for the game, no doubt about it. And the one thing that baseball's shown that it can bounce back
right
from all kinds of challenges, whether it's strikes and things like that. And, you know, it's not something that I don't think anyone's proud of. It's not a good moment right now, but there's no doubt whether it's steroids or things like that. The game has survived a lot. And now, I was with LA in 2017, and I remember, I mean, we lost, you know, a game at home, game two. Kenley Jansen gave up a home run to Marwin Gonzalez. That was tough. Game seven, Yu Darvish had a rough start. Those were home games. Game five against the Astros, I think we lost 13-12, and that was the game. I mean, that probably got back to my hotel room at 2 or 3 in the morning, and I had a flight to go to Atlanta to come interview for the job. So, and that was probably the most painful game to watch. Of all of them. But, look, I think what happened. It's going to be talked about. It's certainly not good for the industry. I do think we will get through it when it's all said and done.
With Alex Anthopoulos, the president of baseball ops for the Atlanta Braves, and Alex, I mean, you work for an organization, and part of the reason you are there is, and you just referred to that job interview in the middle of the World Series a couple of years ago, was because the former GM of Atlanta, John Coppolella, at 38 years old, was banned from the sport for life for some violations in the international signing market involving teenagers in Latin America and elsewhere. And part of the penalties that your organization incurred as a result of that behavior continues to this day because there are restrictions for you on the international market over a 3-year period. So I would imagine you're entering the third and final year of that. I'm not asking you to compare what you're dealing with the forfeiture of 4 draft picks and a $5 million fine to the Astros owner, Jim Crane. So I'm not asking you to compare your punishment to Houston's punishment, but what effect has the punishment that you incurred by taking the job had on your organization over the last 2+ seasons?
Huge. Some in a very positive way because we really tightened up all of our procedures, policies, compliance, things like that, to really make sure nothing like this would ever happen again with the organization. So that's definitely a positive at the end of the day. Look, the international sanctions, they are going to hurt. And realistically, we weren't going to see them bear fruit and really impact us in the first few years that I was here. But when you really think about when you're signing 16-year-old players and we're really not back full in the international market until 2021, that could be our first year of having a full class. You're signing 16-year-olds at that time, just your first class. Maybe it's 1 or 2 players. If you hit and you get those guys right, you're still looking at 5-6 years beyond that. So now you're looking at this all happened 2017. The classes before I got here in 16, 17 were wiped out. And now you may not see the results of your first one till maybe 2026, 2027. So there's almost a 10-year span there that from an international standpoint, it's going to hurt. Now, that being said, I got asked about it after I got the job. The sanctions only came down maybe a few weeks or a month after I'd already accepted the position. I think I was asked many times, if you had known this before, would you have accepted the position? And I said, absolutely. Every job you take, there will be challenges, whether it's your first year, your third year, your fourth year. A star player, a core player you thought was going to be a real key piece for you may have some type of injury where they're not the same anymore. Someone that you projected to be good may not be the same. Things with payroll might change. So there's just variations of those challenges. If the core elements of the organization and what you believe in make it a great job, that's not going to change because of a bump in the road here and there, especially if you're taking the long view that you expect to be somewhere for a long time.
Before we get you out of here, just because his name is an interest to all of us, Josh Donaldson, 4 years, 92 mil, so 23 a year in Minnesota, played for you last year. How close were you to keeping him?
You know, we are, I believe, and we were his first choice, and that's part of the advantage when you have someone in your clubhouse. I know for a fact he adored being here. We loved having him. The players did as well. To a man, they loved him. And I think the first 6 weeks, a lot of people didn't know him, and it took a little bit of time. But then when you see what he's all about and how he raises the level of expectations around the group, he was huge for us. So we were right there. I mean, you know, most times you get to free agency, you might start and you're starting to think, okay, this we may do a deal at a certain spot. And then as the things start to develop and move, we stretched and went beyond where we wanted to go. You know, clearly, we didn't match the Twins. I think if we had, we had a very real chance to bring him back. But, you know, there were other challenges for us where we have 2 young guys at third base. Ultimately, on a 4-year deal, we would be blocking those guys. We're prepared to do it up to a point. And then you look at the financial commitment as well. Now, that being said, I'm thrilled for Josh. I've said this many times. He's made me look really good as a GM, both in Toronto and Atlanta. I owe him a lot. A lot of my success as a GM is because of him. He seems to win everywhere he goes. I mean, he's been in the playoffs almost every year. That's not a fluke. That's not a coincidence. There's a real element that he brings. And when we went into this marriage or partnership, if you want to call it that, the thought was, let's get you back. We will get you back, and we'll get that games played column up the way it always was, and we will get you back to who you were, and you're going to get the contract you deserve, either from Atlanta or somewhere else. So I'm proud of the fact that we held up our end of the bargain. He did well for himself, his family. He gave us every opportunity to sign him back. I'm relieved it's not in the NL, especially in the NL East.